Well, now I want to bring you a selection from Huckleberry Finn. Now, there may be a few unreformed people here who have not read this book, so I've got to fill you in. Huckleberry Finn is a story of a boy by the name of Huckleberry Finn. And a Negro slave by the name of Jim. Both of them from the same little Mississippi town. And both of them have run away. Huck's run away because his father, who's a drunkard, beats him. And Jim's run away because he's found out that his mistress is going to sell him down to New Orleans for $850. He's afraid he'll never see his wife and children again, so he runs away. And they meet on this little island below town, and they decide to throw in together. And they wait for an empty section of log rafts to come along, and when they see one, they climb aboard and go booming down the Mississippi together. And in the book, Huck tells the story, and it goes something like this.
It's lovely to live on a raft. There ain't no home like it, after all. Other places do seem so cramped up and smothery, but a raft don't. You feel mighty free and easy and comfortable on one of them. We used to travel nights so as not to get caught. And sometimes we'd have that whole river all to ourselves for the longest time. We had the sky up there, all speckled with stars. We used to lay on our backs and look up at them and discuss about whether they was made or only just happened. Jim, he allowed they was made, but I allowed they happened. I judge it would have took too long to make so many. Jim, he says the moon could have laid them. Well, that looked kind of reasonable, so I didn't say nothing against it. Because after all, I seen a frog lay most as many. So, of course, it could be done. We had considerable adventures. Once, when we was pretty well down the state of Arkansas, we come in sight of a little one-horse town, the big bend of the river. So we slid the raft in beneath some sapras and tied up and went on into town. All the stores was along one street. You'd see as many as one loafer leaning up against every awning post. He most always had his hands in his breeches, except when he fetched them out to lend a chaw of tobacco or a scratch. All the streets was just mud about a foot deep in some places. You'd see a muddy sow and a litter of pigs come lazying along and wallop herself right down the way where folks had to go around her. And then she'd stretch herself out and close her eyes and wiggle her ears while the pigs was milking her and look just as happy as if she's on salary. Then by and by, one of those loafers would sing out, "Hi, so boy, sick 'em tight," and away that sow would go, squealing most horrible, with a dog or two swinging to each ear. 3-4 dozen more coming. Well, all the loafers would get up and watch the thing out of sight and laugh at the fun and look grateful for the noise. Then they'd settle back down again till there was a dog fight. Couldn't anything wake them up all over. Make them happy like a dog fight. This might be putting turpentine on a stray dog and setting fire to him. Or tying a tin pan to his tail, see him run himself to death. There's gonna be a circus in town that afternoon, and the country folks was already beginning to come in. There's considerable whiskey drinking going on. I seen three fights. By and by, one of those loafers sings out, "Here comes old Boggs in town for his little old monthly drunk. Here he comes, boys." All the loafers look glad. One of them says, "I wonder who old Boggs is going to chow up this time. Definitely chowed up all men he's been going to chow up in the last 20 years. He'd have considerable reputation now." Another one says, "I wish old Boggs would have threatened me, cause then I'd know I want one die for 1,000 years. But Boggs comes a-tearing along his horse, whooping and yelling like an Injun, and singing out, "Clear the track there! I'm on the warpath, and the price of coffins is going to raise." Why, he was drunk, of course, and weaving around in his saddle, and everybody yelled at him and sassed him, and he sassed back and said he'd tend to them and lay them out in their regular turn. But he couldn't wait now, cause he come to town to kill old Colonel Sherburne. And his motto was, "Meat first and spoon victuals to top off on." But he rode up before the biggest door in town and bent his head down so he could see under the awning and calls out, "Moon out here, Sherburne, you're the man I'm after. Moon out here. Meet the man you swindled." Well, he went on calling Sherburne everything he could lay his tongue to. And by a proud-looking man of about 55, and he's hit the best-dressed man in town too, steps out of the store, and the crowd moves back on both sides to let him through. And he says to Boggs, "I'm tired of this, but I'll endure it until 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock, mind you, no longer. If you so much as open your mouth against me only once after that time, you can't travel so far, but I'll find you." Then he turns and goes in. Crowd looked mighty sober. Nobody stirred, and they weren't more laughing. Some of the men crowded around Boggs and tried to get him to shut up, but he wouldn't. They told him it'd be 1 o'clock in about 15 minutes, so he must go home. But it didn't do any good. He just went on cussing Sherburne with all his might, and then he threw his hat down in the mud and rolled over it. Away he went, raging down the street with his gray hair flying. Somebody sings out, "Go for his daughter, quick, sometimes he'll listen to her." Somebody started on the run. Then in about 10 minutes, here comes Boggs again, but not on his horse. He was a-reeling across the street towards me, and he had a friend on both sides of him, hurrying him along. He was quiet and looked uneasy. And he weren't hanging back, and he but was doing some of the hurrying himself. Somebody sings out, "Boggs!" It was that Colonel Sherburne. He was standing perfectly still in the middle of the street, and he had a pistol raised in his right hand, not aiming it, but holding it out with a barrel pointed up towards the sky. That same second, I see a young girl coming on the run with two men with her. Boggs and his friends turned round to see who called them, and when the men seen that pistol, they jumped to one side, and the barrel come down slow and steady to a level. Both barrels cocked. Boggs throwed up both his hands and shouted, "Oh, Lord, don't shoot! Bang!" with the first shot. And Boggs staggered back, clawing there. Bang! with the second one. And tumbled Boggs backward onto the ground, heavy and solid, with his arms spread out. Crowd closed in around him, stretching their necks and elbowing to see. Colonel Sherburne tossed his pistol onto the ground, turned round on his heels, and walked off. They took Boggs to a little drugstore. In about a minute, the whole town was there, pushing and shoving to get at the window and have a look. But the people that had the places wouldn't give them up. And folks behind them was all time saying, "Say, now, you've looked enough. You fellas, 'tain't fair for you to stand there and never give nobody else a chance."
Other folks have their rights as well as you.
Meanwhile, Boggs died. They took his little daughter off him and carried her away. She was about 16 and very sweet and gentle looking, but awful pale and scared. Well, then somebody says Sherburne ought to be lynched. In about a minute, everybody was saying it. They snatched down the nearest clothesline and went swarming up towards Sherburne's house, whooping and yelling like Injuns, and everything had to get out of the way, get run over and tromped on. Children and dogs was heeling it ahead of that mob just as fast as they could go. When they got to Sherburne's house, somebody sings out, "Tear down the fence!" And there was a racket of ripping and smashing, and down she goes! And the front wall, that crowd began to move in like a wave. And just then, Colonel Sherburne steps out onto the roof of his little front porch with a double-barrel shotgun in his hand and takes his stand, perfectly calm and deliberate, not saying a word. The racket stopped and the wave sucked back. Colonel Sherburne ran his eyes slow along that crowd, and wherever it struck, people tried a little to outgaze him, but they couldn't. They dropped their eyes and looked sneaky. Then Colonel Sherburne spoke up.
"The idea of you trying to lynch anybody, it's amusing. The idea of you thinking you had pluck enough to lynch a man. Just cause you're brave enough to tar and feather poor friendless cast out women come along here. That'd make you think you had grit enough to lay hands on a man. Why, a man's safe in the hands of 10,000 of your kind. So long as it's daylight and you're not behind him. I know you clear through. I was born and raised in the South and I've lived in the North, so I know the average all around. The average man's a coward. Why don't you juries hang your murderers? Because they're afraid his friends will shoot him in the back in the dark. And it's just what they would do too. So they always acquit. And then a man goes in the night with 100 masked cowards at his back and lynches the rascal. Now, your mistake was you didn't bring a man along with you. That was one mistake. And the other one was you didn't come in the dark and fetch your masks. You brought part of a man. Buck Harkness there. And if you hadn't had him to start you, you'd have taken it out and blown. Now the thing for you to do is to droop your tails and go home and crawl in a hole. If there's going to be any lynching done around here, it'll be done in the dark. And they'll bring their masks and fetch a man along. Now leave and take your part of a man along with you. And he threw his gun up over his left arm and cocked it when he said that, and that crowd broke all apart and went streaming off in all directions. And Buck Harkness, he yelled it after him too, looking tolerable cheap. I could have stayed if I'd wanted to, but I didn't want to. I went to the circus. And it was just a bulliest circus you ever did see, too. And then when night was coming on, I went back to the raft where Jim was waiting for me. We shoved out. We didn't talk nor say much till we was well below town. Stars was just beginning to come out. And they was awful pretty. It was kind of solemn. Drifting down that big, still river, laying on our backs, looking up at the sky. We said there just weren't no home like a raft, after all.